This past Thursday night, this past Thursday night, my Rebbe, Rabbi Dr. Danny Wolf, passed away. And I'm sure most of you here have never heard of him before. He wasn't a Rebbe of a shul. He wasn't on YU Torah. Never got a PhD. Didn't run any svarim. You probably wouldn't even have heard his name until I mention it right now. And the truth is that I think he was one of the most incredible human beings and certainly personified what a Talmud Chacham is supposed to be. And I just want to bring you in so you can understand what kind of person he was. And what he was able to do for me, and how this yeshiva, in many ways, captures who he was as a person. Yeah, I remember the first time I met him. I wish I could say it was some type of monumental experience. It wasn't. My Rebbe in high school brought him in for a mishmar, and I had his wife as a teacher, and I'll. Wish I could say I appreciated her tremendously, but I don't know, I was like 11th grade, and I wasn't at that point in my life where I could appreciate someone like that. But he came in to do a mishmar, and I gotta be honest, I had no idea what he was talking about. None. But he looked at the board, and afterwards it was like one of those pictures of like a physicist who somehow put together this incredible work of art that only he could understand. And I had no idea what he was talking about. But I knew that this guy must be a brilliant human being. But the truth is that it wasn't until I moved down to Florida for dental school that I really came to understand and really understand who he was and what an unbelievable human being he was. I remember when I went down, I had a few years in yeshiva under my belt, and my wife and I moved down to Florida, and we lived about a quarter of a mile from their house. And I was in shul one time, and he said to me, why don't you come over for Kiddush? I'd been there in North Miami Beach for a couple of weeks, and it was hard being away from yeshiva, had to set up your life in a way where, you're able to learn and take classes in school. And it was a challenging time. And I remember this, I don't remember from high school too much. And he says, coming over for Kiddush. Maybe we'll learn a little bit afterwards. And it sounded like an interesting thing. And I remember we discussed the first time, but I remember coming to his house and looking back on it, I got the sense that that must have been what Avram's tent was like, because it was going into an environment on Shabbos where, like, the learning was a different kind of experience. It really was a removal. What Shabbos I think is supposed to be, a period of time where you really are divorced from the physical world. And being in his world was incomparable. It's words don't do enough to explain what it was like. He was, I think, one of the most creative human beings I've ever known. Every time we learned on Shabbos, he would bring up a stira, like a contradiction, some issue in Gemara. And I remember thinking to myself, that's it for Torah. I mean, the clarity of his contradiction or his kasha would be so strong that I really thought that the foundations of Torah would not hold. And then working through it with him, and that was another thing about him. It was never him lecturing. It was never him giving us tons of sources. It was nothing like that. It was simple Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos. And somehow, he would save the Torah every single time. Every single time. And every svar he gave was so clear and so creative. It was just incredible. And I realized over time that in some extent it was like Avram Zohal, but it was more than that. It was really like being like in Ruach Chaim Shir, which the truth is people don't realize there were very few people who were in a Shir. It was like an environment of creation that was just absolutely incredible. And being there was really, really just a different realm of thinking. And it took me time to appreciate it. But as time went on, I realized it just every single time, the clarity, the precision, the importance of him, of making sure that every single idea he said was clear and understood. And it was just tremendous. And I think a part of a Rebbe's responsibility is to pass down a Mesorah of sorts. And I find the Mesorah that he gave me is really summed up in this Gemara in Moed Katan. Because the Gemara in Moed Katan in Chav Dalet Amud Aleph says that it's in the middle of asking a question, but it says, Amrulei Lishmuel Nach Nafshei Derav. It says, Karalea Trace Our Money, V'amar Azal Gavra Dehava Mistafina Mine. So basically, after he heard his Rebbe passed away, or Rav passed away, so then he tore 12 garments. And the key thing is that he mourned over the fact that the person who went to Olam Haba was the person who would ask him the kashas. And he was afraid. He was always afraid of those kashas. He was afraid of those kashas. And it's funny, like, what kind of thing is that? He's afraid of the kashas. What do you mean he was afraid of being asked questions? But I think the idea is a very basic idea. Ray Wolf demanded a level of clarity and precision that, for the sake of Torah, for the sake of truth, that was an expectation. And I know that for me, every time that I come up with some type of svara, I always ask myself, like, what would he think about the svara? Right? Is he there? He didn't have to be with me physically, but in my mind, he's some part of him is always there, always making sure, checking me to make sure that this idea is a clear idea. And that if it wasn't clear, like, I knew he would be saying to me, that's a terrible svara. And he would demand, he'd make me work at it until I got to that point of it being clear. It's just a remarkable thing. And that was a genius. I remember one time we went to the sugya, a very well-known area of the idea, the Rambam's concept of not taking money to learn or to teach. And I remember going through it, and if you ever see the Kesef Mishnas on it, they're just so, the kashas are so incredibly powerful. And he just, you know, at first, again, after we learned all the kashas, it was like, how is Rambam going to get out of this? And just like, in one fell swoop, he was able to demonstrate where the Kesef Mishnas kashas were wrong and how the Rambam Svara made a lot of sense. And I remember afterwards, like, we looked at each other, and I had this feeling of like we just found out something that no one else understood. Like, we discovered something new. And that feeling of discovery was also something that happened every Shabbos at his house. Every Shabbos that I was there, it was never a repetition, or, sorry for the connotation, a regurgitation of what someone else said. It was always something new that we would discover together. And for me, that feeling, that idea of creativity, of always discovering something new, was something I've always carried with me as a result of him. And I do feel that in many ways this yeshiva tries to capture that as well. The idea of being creative, of creating something new, of discovering that which is new. And that's something I think that Rabbi Wolf was always involved in. So that's one part of who he was. And the truth is, for those who knew him, anyone would tell you that he was just a genius unlike any other. Again, one of the clearest and most creative thinkers I've ever met in my life. But there was another side of him, the human side of him, which I want to talk about for a bit, which also people didn't understand. And I used to always ask myself, like, here's a guy who has so much Torah. I mean, he's such a genius. And he didn't go into chinuch. He was very happy. We used to call it the lair. He was very happy in his house with his family. And there was, you know, a couple guys come over to learn with him, and that was it. Very, very small circle of what made him happy learning-wise. He didn't have that ambition, that need. And there's a part of me that wanted to believe that he saw the idea of really challenging the Rambam, of getting paid to learn, as in his mind, as a potential corruption. Because he really had no ego attachment whatsoever to Torah, and he didn't want anything ever to get in the way, to ever distort him in his learning. But as my wife pointed out to me, that's nice, maybe. Maybe an idealized form. But the truth is, it just didn't interest him. It wasn't what he was interested in. And that led to some misunderstanding about who he was. So I just want to bring in a point from this upcoming week's Parsha in Baal Loscha. I think we're all familiar with the story at the end of the Parsha of the Lashon Hara that's launched against Moshe. And when the Torah lists the story, the Torah explains what happened, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard, and we are familiar that the Torah stops the narrative, so to speak. It takes a break, the narrative, to let us know that Moshe was the most humble of all people, more than anyone else. And the idea of humility is a very, very, obviously we all know, is a very, very important trait. It's always hard to understand what exactly humility means, especially Moshe being the one who personifies it. As well, one thing that always bothered me was, why did Moshe ever give tochacha to Miriam and Aaron? There's a positive mitzvah. There's a positive commandment for us to go ahead and rebuke somebody if they're committing a sin. So why did Moshe say to Aaron and Miriam, listen, you're engaged in a chet right now. Why didn't he say that? So the Ramban offers three different interpretations as to what was the nature of Moshe's humility. So the first one is that he says that that Moshe would never respond to a personal attack, ever. He would just never do such a thing. And the second one is he quotes Ibn Ezra, who says that Moshe never sought out to be superior to anyone else, even though he knew who he was, as an exalted person. He never, never, ever sought out to be considered superior. And finally, he quotes a Sifrei, which says that Moshe actually restrained himself. Really, he wanted to, so to speak, rebuke them, but he held back. He held back rebuking them, but doesn't really explain why. But because Moshe held back, that's why God has to step in. So I think what the Ramban's trying to tell us is Pshatim are that when it comes to responding to a personal attack, so why is it when a person says Lashon Hara about ourselves? Why is it when someone insults you? Why does someone get bothered by it? It usually comes from an insecurity because we want to see ourselves as being perfect. It's just human nature. We want to see ourselves as being perfect. And if someone comes along and challenges that idea of perfection, it bothers you because it's very difficult to have that type of security about yourself. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he really knew who he was in the clearest way possible. And he never had a fear of any type of self-reflection. There was never a moment in Moshe's life where he had to ask himself, maybe I have to revisit something. He didn't. He understood who he was. It was a certain clarity of who he was as a person. And that's one unique idea in Anivus. And that was something I saw in Raya Wolf all the time as well. He really knew who he was. And he didn't, in a way that people, they made a mistake. Sometimes people thought he was arrogant. And they didn't understand that he would fight for Torah, tooth and nail. He would fight as hard as possible for what he saw as being true and MS. But it doesn't mean he was arrogant, because he knew who he was as a person. And he really, in that sense, conveyed that trait of Anivus. And then also, as the Ibn Ezra says, that when a person recognizes they have a certain gift, like Moshe did, Moshe knew who he was. And it's very natural for a person when you have that kind of gift to think they're superhuman, to think you're really above humanity. It's just easy to fall into that trap. And the truth is, Raya Wolf had every reason to think that, because he had a gift unlike any other. But he never saw himself that way. He really saw himself as an Eved Hashem, solely. And it's a remarkable thing. And then finally, in that last shot in the Sifrei, why didn't Moshe respond? And I think the reason why is because, and we see this theme throughout the Avos, that when Moshe, when he found out about what Miriam and Aaron had said, so, and this is a very difficult idea to imagine, but Moshe asked himself, maybe there's some truth to what they're saying. Maybe they're right. Maybe there's something that I missed about myself. Maybe there is that defect. And rather than rebuke them, before he could rebuke them, he had to analyze himself and realize maybe there was something I did that was wrong. I remember there was one time when I was learning in his house with his family, and someone came over. I don't know who it was. An older guy from the community came over. And Rav Wolf, when anyone would come over, he'd always invite them to come learn. And I realized it was very hard. I mean, back then, I guess a little more arrogant, you know, I would say to myself, like, no one's going to get it. Like, it's really like, it's like a different language, you know. But he generally wanted it. If someone came over, he wanted them to join him learning. And I remember this guy came in and he sat down for like, I don't know, 10 minutes. I don't remember how long. And then he kind of got up and left. And I saw that, like, you know, I think me and maybe one of his kids, we were like, you know, better off without that guy. But he was bothered by it. Ray Wolf. I could tell he was very bothered, and he wanted to know, like, maybe he said something wrong. Maybe there was some, maybe when presenting the ideas there was a problem. Maybe there was something that he said that was a problem. Maybe in some way he directed himself. And he was really bothered by the fact that the guy left. When, in truth, probably the guy left because he had no idea what was going on. At the same time, Rare Wolf saw it as a possible problem. And he was able to stop and, rather than just put it on the guy, ask himself, what did he do that might have caused that guy to leave? And I found it to be a remarkable thing. Sometimes you see someone with his type of brilliance to act in such a way, to me, was something I still remember to this day. And I want to just end off also talking about what kind of father he was, because I had the unique privilege of when I was there on Shabbos, I really became part of their family, my wife as well. And to this day, they really are like my family. And, you know, there's a famous Gemara that says that that when you light Hanukkah candles in your house, so your kids will become Talmid Chachamim. Okay, Margil, someone who does it continuously or regularly. So his kids will become Talmid Chachamim. And of course, the easy question is that when you see a causal relationship like that, that should trouble you. Obviously, you know, if it was Zizi's lighting a Hanukkah candle and her kids becoming Talmid Chachamim, be a lot of Talmid Chachamim. So what idea does the Gemara trying to evoke there? And it's a more complex area, but I think one concept that the Gemara is alluding to is that when a family value, when especially when the parents light Hanukkah candles, or when they express a public value of a mitzvah, and the kids see that, they're gonna, and they see that how much the parents value it, they'll internalize it and become part of who they are. And he was able to do that so well with his kids. He created a house of Torah and ideas, of not just Shmiras Halacha, of like following every nuance of halacha, but also building a house of creativity and a passion for learning that to this day all his kids have, who I'm all very close with, and to be able to produce that result is astonishing. It's astonishing to be able to really build a house like that, to build a house where Torah ideals are part of everyday conversation. It's almost like every nook and cranny of that house in some way was filled with Torah. And you see it in his children. You see it in his children. So I hope at least you have some understanding of who he was. You know, for me, he really, you know, he wasn't the person who taught me the most Torah, but certainly in the idea of how to learn and how to be creative and how to really, really understand what learning is supposed to be. That's who this person was. So I hope in these few minutes you have at least a brief understanding of who Rabbi Dr. Wolf was and how not only he had an impact on me, but on how this yeshiva as well. Thank you.